Welcome back, Contians, to another episode of iContivan Podcast. This is episode 42, and I am your host, Lakota. On today's Shoot the Shit Sunday, I'm going to have Kate back on. You guys really seem to like hearing his input on the music industry, how he's involved, and what's changing about it. So I have him back on, and I'll be having on the entire band of Vinewood, probably, if not this week, the next week. So I think you guys will enjoy them too. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoy this episode.
Coors Banquet, brewed in the Rockies.
All right. I think it's recording. It is. Cabe.
Hello, Shoot the Shit Sundays.
Bro, this is so cool. So I just want to let the listeners know, Cabe and I think we already discussed how we solved the problem we were having before. And I didn't think an application like this existed, where it records two single files on their own individually and then combines them. Or you can combine them if necessary.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. It's literally what we did, but like an app.
Yeah. So it's called Zencastr. This is my first time using it.
Hold up. Is my shit coming through? Because it doesn't look like it. Yours is way louder than mine.
Yours is much smaller, but I'm hearing you just fine.
Check, check, check. Turn up my gain. No,
that's not going to work.
Hello?
No, that worked. That made your WAV file much bigger.
Okay, maybe it's just my computer. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it just might be how
it works. This is being weird. Like, it's not even my... Oh, I just need to get closer to it. Hello. All right, we're good.
There we go. So now it's picking up. Okay, so you guys really liked the episode that Cabe and I did a couple weeks ago.
Wait, they did?
Yeah, dude. I mean, it got, like, a decent amount of listens. Like,
I think a lot of that was me. I'm just kidding. Silent stream just... this shit.
Hey, I silent stream this all day for days. Let's do it. So I decided to have him back on. Actually, you hit me up like a couple days ago or so, and you're like, bro, let's do another podcast.
I mean, I always want to do a podcast. I mean, the more that I can talk about whatever the fuck I want to talk about, the better. So
I'm down. And I'm always down to have a dope-ass guest like Cabe. So the last time we spoke, Vinewood was coming out with a new single, and it's Silence out. Went out. Yeah, it's out. How's it doing? How's it performing? Performing well?
I'll look at the numbers right now. Okay, we're sitting at 5,400 on Spotify.
That's awesome.
We had fucking, geez. I mean, we had 1,400 plays our first day out.
That's awesome.
Which is really good. I mean, it took the song that me and John put out last summer or last spring. It took us almost like 3 weeks to get to 1,000. So,
wow.
It's performing pretty well. We just got the first mix back for our next single, and it is dope as shit. It's amazing. Okay.
I'm excited for it because Silence was dope.
I'm gonna send you this one as long as you promise not to send it out to anybody. I'm about to text it to you. Listen in like headphones or speakers or something. Sick.
I will. And I this is like the perks of knowing people in the music industry. You get to hear shit first before anyone else.
Yeah, but it's not like it's crazy cool yet because we're not anything yet. We're still little baby Vinewood. But in a couple years, I'm telling you, dude,
you'll get
the first listens.
Bro, you got to start somewhere. That's the thing. And that's what, like, yeah. I've tried to explain to, like, anyone who's come to me for advice on, like, podcasting and stuff like that. It's like, well, you know, I can only tell you what I've learned. I'm definitely nowhere near an expert. But
who is? Like, who is an expert? Who's an expert at anything?
Well, I mean,
nobody.
I mean, I would argue that there are experts in individual fields, right? No. Like... okay, let's talk about music production. Would you call Rick Rubin an expert producer?
Yeah, but he's still learning.
Exactly. Like, that's the key thing. That's the key thing. You're always having to learn. And if you stop learning, then what's the point?
Yeah.
Right. Dude, it gets that's boring the
same
at that
thing.
Point.
That's the same thing with music too. Like when people talk about the, like the pop country, first off, my argument to this, if you guys like any type of good music, go listen to Sam Hunt's new record. Cause it's amazing. It's really, really good. It's got some really deep country tracks. It's got some really good pop ballads. Like it's all around great. And I love that kind of music, but I also love traditional country. But my point is, if it never changes, if like, if something never evolves, that it just becomes stagnant and no one's going to care anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
So,
well, and I absolutely agree with that statement too.
And the reason that I like that record so much is because it encompasses so many different things. Like it's got a ton of pop elements. It's also got a ton of country elements. Like, I mean, the first song on the record is just him, a steel guitar and a guitar. And the next one is like a sample of a Webb Pierce song from like 1955. And they like made it a huge like hip hop pop thing. I don't know. It's dope. So that everything, my point is everything's got to evolve for it to grow.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, and that's what I'm learning the most with podcasting is that there's so many more elements that I'm learning. Like the whole Zencaster thing. Yeah. Didn't know it existed. It's decently costly for what it is, but it's a good investment for what I do. And so that's another aspect of learning is that you have to invest in yourself, right? And, you know, whether it be books, whether it be equipment, whether it be mentorship, whether it be classes, you always have to keep developing learning. And that, you know, takes time, it takes money. Yeah. And it takes like the desire to grow, like have that growth mindset.
Yeah.
So, dude, it's sick. I'm actually looking forward to what Vinewood and all the things that you touch, where it's going to be here in the next 2, 3, 5 years.
Let's hope we can play live shows before damn 2021. And
dude, like, seriously,
we'll be good.
So, dude, so talking about, I don't know if we got into too much of depth with Vivint on the last podcast, but right now with door to door, you know, markets are, you know, supposedly supposed to be opening up May 1st or the middle of May.
So what Caleb told me last is they're not allowed to knock until May 11th, but they can do like leads and stuff starting May 4th.
Like, oh, Puronic stuff.
No, with Vivint. He's still, Caleb's still working for Vivint too.
Good.
So he's going out this summer to Austin.
That's awesome. So I'm probably not doing a summer with Vivint.
Good.
Yeah. It's actually a very bittersweet moment. I still haven't made like a conclusive decision, but, you know, I'm slinging dough for my loyal podcast listeners. You know that I swallowed my pride and went and got a job at Domino's and HEB.
Did you really?
Yeah, straight up, dude.
Dude.
Straight up. So I'm delivering pizzas. So I started last week and I've been making between $60 and $75 a night in tips.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's not bad at
dude,
all.
You need to start doing, you need to get on the DoorDash grind.
Dude, DoorDash here isn't that big.
What's so big that's, down there, waiter?
No, none of them. Like, really? That's, yeah, dude. That's
even
why
now?
Yeah, that's why. Dang. I haven't done those gig jobs. Like,
that's wild.
It exists, but you got to realize, dude, I live in a population that is 2.5 hours away from any major city. Okay. And the culture down here is very frugal. Like, I don't even, for probably 60% of the deliveries that I make with Domino's, I don't even get tipped on because people are just, they're cheap. They're cheap.
They're
here.
Dicks, dude. They don't realize you need a tip. It's like, bro, waiters and waitresses.
Because they think the delivery charge is a tip, but it's not. Like, that doesn't tip me. That delivery charge actually, from my understanding, just pays for my gas.
Yeah.
And that, not even like fully, it pays me $1.45 per delivery, which I think is the delivery charge.
Yeah.
So, no, it's a cultural thing down here, and it's also a smaller city. We're a population of like 200,000 people, and the closest city, like I said, being about 2.5, 3 hours away. That's a million. So, but no, the Domino's thing's actually been pretty interesting. I started last week, and I've already been offered assistant manager position. So it's not a crazy promotion. I'm still working through the Border Patrol process. So I don't know if I told you that, but I'm actually working to become a Border Patrol agent.
Yeah.
And so that's just a long process. So that's the ultimate goal, is like by the end of the summer or midway through the summer, I'm at the academy in New Mexico, training to be a Border Patrol agent.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know if I recently told you, they actually did tentatively offer me the job.
Of Border Patrol?
Yeah. So Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection offered me a GS-7 position. I applied for a GS-5 position. So speaking the GS...
Dakota, what is that?
Yeah, I got you. So it's a government pay level.
Oh,
so okay. GS-5 to through GS-7, they're entry-level jobs. GS-5 being like, you know, the entry level for any kind of law enforcement on the federal level. And it starts out at 50,000, about 49,000 plus LEAP, which is a law. So the GS-5 position is what I applied for. It starts at 50,000 plus benefits and all that.
Dang.
They offered me the GS-7, which starts out at 70,000 plus benefits and all that. So, that's a good sign. I passed my Border Patrol entrance exam. And now I just need to do the medical fitness and the drug tests, which I should pass all of that. And then the polygraph.
Yeah.
And then I have an interview in front of a board. So, I mean, I have marks against me, as far as like law enforcement goes, like what they're looking for. But I also know that I have a high moral code that I do live by, and my history in studying philosophy, specializing in ethical theory, really like helps me. So, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, if I don't get a job there, I'm gonna have to.
Dude, move to Nashville. Screw Laredo. Where are you, Laredo?
I'm in Laredo.
Dude, why are you living there? Move to Nashville. It's a booming city. It's super mm-hmm. dope. You can run point as security for Vinewood or whatever. I'll hire you.
There you go. Dude, I honestly, so let's talk about employment. I'm 26.
Yeah.
And I never thought the Vivint situation would be like this, where I'd be like considering leaving without a steady stream of income coming in. And I have multiple streams of income coming in, but they're not a crazy amount. And so it's kind of surreal for me to be almost 30 years old and like still not in a career.
Yeah. But like, this is crazy. I was literally thinking about this like an hour ago. Like, what even is a career? Like, like, I'm not going to just be an artist manager. Hell, I might not even end up in that. But that's what I'm doing right now. But I'm also working for a sales company, selling water purification stuff. And I also plan on getting into real estate. And I also plan on this, that, and the other. Like, what the hell even is a career? I don't want to have a career. Like, I don't want to just do one thing. I'm also ADHD as hell.
Same.
So, I mean, I don't think that I would be able to do that. But I don't know.
It's weird.
Yeah.
And so I'm at a point right now where I think it was a couple weeks ago or maybe a month ago. I don't know. But I had a very like a pivot in my existential identity.
Yeah.
I was like, man, what in the fuck am I doing? Who am I? Right. Like I wear many masks. And most people do. There's a term in sociology called dramaturgy. And so dramaturgy is like the many masks that we wear in different situations and different audiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have an online CBD company. I have a podcast. I have these media outlets. I'm slinging dough at Domino's. I work at HEB like once a week or so.
Yeah.
Just to fill in hours. I still sell Vivint. I just closed an upgrade last week or this week too. And
the new upgrade program is dope.
It actually is really nice. It's very convenient. It's very convenient. It helps the customer out. It helps Vivin out. So, and this dude got a really good deal. So good. And that's the thing, like, dude, I have multiple streams of income and I always have I think the Vivin pause for 3 years was the first time where I'd only focused on one stream of income.
Yeah,
when I was in college, I worked like three jobs. Before college, I worked two.
What I hate about like people trying to like adults that are like, hey, like you need to figure out what you want to do. And I haven't had that conversation with anyone since like the end of high school. But like, you need to figure out what you want to do with your life. Like, what are you going to do? Oh, that's not going to work. Why would you even try that? Like, why would you go study music business? That's a completely useless degree. And in a way it is, it's more about the experience than it is the classes, but
right.
Like, who the hell are you? Like, shut up. Like you build houses. Like, you're a contractor. I don't need to hear this shit from you. You know what I mean? I mean, right. I had that conversation with one of my friend's dads, who I still love. I love that guy. But he was just like, so why are you going to study music business? Like, what is the point? Like, why even do that? And I'm like, what's the point in building a damn house? Like, you're doing it for right. the money. You're not doing it because you love to build houses. You build little cookie cutter homes that look all the same. Like, you don't do it for the design. You do it to make money. Like, I'm doing this because this is what I want to do, you know?
Bro, so I was talking with the general manager of Domino's. She's awesome. I've actually, like, really enjoyed the experience so far. But I was, the first day she went out training me to do a delivery, which it's not rocket science. You show up, give them a pizza, you take the money, you leave, right? Yeah. But it was like so surreal to like have someone train me to do that. I'm like, okay. So I don't go inside. Okay. Yeah, I don't transition to the house. Okay.
Let me take a look at your thermostat.
Yeah. Let me take a look at that back door sensor real quick. only door knockers are going to understand this yeah. kind of humor, but, so we were talking on the way back about real estate, because that's something that I also want to get into. I don't want to be an agent. I don't want to be a broker. I want to be an owner. I want to be an investor. And so I was kind of breaking down like some ideas for investment properties, because she was like, oh yeah, I bought a house. I was like, oh, is it new? She goes, no, it's older, but it's in great condition. I'm like, oh, okay. Is it like an investment property or is it yours? She goes, no, it's mine. I'm like, have you ever thought about like owning a couple properties? She goes, no. I'm like, and I broke down like how you can make passive income. And
dude, I properties. Told my mom this the other day. I was like, because right now, I mean, screw COVID-19. This shit sucks. But I was trying to make the most of it because, I mean, I work in Nashville when I'm going to deliver food and stuff. And I drive through all these super cool neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And there's these super cool high-rise-ish homes. They're like three stories, but they're skinny. They look like the houses in San Francisco from Full House. That's what it looks like on the outside. That's kind of what it looks like.
But more modern, right?
But more modern. And so I called my mom. I dropped this food off. I called my mom and I was like, we should buy one of these properties. Like, we should do this and invest in this. And I could live here and have four roommates and pay the $2,500, whatever it is a month, like pay the mortgage with that. And I don't have to pay rent. And she was like, I don't have the time for that. Like, why would I buy a rental property? I was like, are you kidding? I was like, it would be so easy to do. It would take maybe a day out of your month to do whatever you need to do for the house. Like, if something breaks or like, I don't understand why there's not more people doing that. And I'm sure there are way more than I realize, because there's a lot of adults that still rent homes to live in. But I mean, just living in a college town, like, They're all over the place here. So why not get in?
The big towns to do rental properties is any town that has a military establishment.
Yep.
Any college town.
Yep.
And any low income areas. So those are three hotbeds for renters. Now your most reliable renters are going to be military families.
Yep.
And dude, it honestly, and you know, I've told a lot of people about real estate. Cause have you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad by like Robert Kiyosaki or whatever his name is. Okay.
No.
You should pick it up. I think it's something that you'd like, and you'd gain a lot more knowledge in real estate than you already have. But I've told so many people, including like really close friends, about real estate investment, and they like shrug it off because I don't own any real estate. It's like, well, if I had the money, I would, right? And that's what I'm working towards now, is to put myself in a financial position where, and I told my wife, our first property that we buy, that first mortgage will not be our home.
Yeah.
She's like, what? I'm like, it's not going to be our home. Like, that's, we're going to fix it up a little bit. Whatever property we buy will probably be like 10 or so years old. Just spruce it up, and then we're going to rent it out. And then we're going to wait 5 years or maybe two, depending on where we're at.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it again. And
dude, that's what I'm saying.
And then we're going to do it again.
Like, I mean, I heard Casey Baugh talk about it one time. He said that he put, because you only have to put 3% down if it's a rental property instead of 20% or whatever a down payment is on a home. 3% of a $150,000 home, which is like a 4-bedroom probably around here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
3% of that is $4,500.
Right.
You could make $4,500 in like a few months.
Like that's
doing,
what I'm saying.
Doing a stupid job.
That's what I'm saying.
So you and save up for a year and you buy a rental property. Like, yeah, it's an investment, but.
And then you put a renter in it immediately, right? And average rent is anywhere between $1,250 to $2,000, right? Yeah. Just depending on the size of the home and the size of the property. Yeah, dude, that's, my plan by 2025 is to have one investment property, just one. That's it. At least one investment property. Yeah. And, it's so doable. If people only knew how easy it was to get into real estate investment, there'd be a lot more millionaires in the world.
Yep.
But the catch is too, is that, and I think the reason why there's not a lot is that people don't understand the intangible. And so they can't comprehend something that they can't physically touch.
Yeah.
Real estate investment is something like that, where you have a property, right? But it's just sitting there with tenants in it, making money for you. You're not out there like working your ass off. Exactly. And that's very hard for people to understand. That's why a lot of people don't even try with long-term stock investment. Doesn't take a genius. You literally look at a high performing company like Tesla or anything like that, and you start putting your money towards it. You don't have to outsmart anything. It's going to grow by itself. And then 20 years down the road, you're going to have that initial investment times 200, whatever it is. Right. So it's just understanding that long-term investment. It's very hard. And especially for like guys like you and I imagine, because I'm very impulsive.
Oh, dude, ADHD. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm so impulsive.
And I need immediate gratification, but I'm training myself to think more long-term. Okay. That's why I'm looking at law enforcement, not only because like, not that I disagree with the Border Patrol mission. Like I definitely believe that we should protect our borders. We like protecting our country and stuff like that. But it's also an investment for my family. You know, I can keep my community safe here in Laredo or wherever I'm at on the border. Also keep my financial security safe by having that career that pays me every month plus overtime plus whatever else, right? And have full benefits so that I can have extra money to throw towards properties.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why I'm starting to think long term. And then, you know, if I get into it, then I play it out for the long run, 20 years, and retire. I can retire in 23 years. If I got in this year, I'd be able to retire in 23 years with Border Patrol. And there's a mandated retirement at 57. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts. You're retired at 57.
Yeah.
So with full pension, there's not many places that have pension anymore.
Yeah.
And it's usually a federal job or a union job that's going to pay you a retirement pension or any kind of government job, municipality, stateside, anything like that. So that's what I'm looking towards. That plays with the real estate. So that's why I'm like, man, that's why I was saying 26 years old. Like if I would have like thought about going into the military sooner when I was fitter, right? And I was like, I could run for days. I could be, I would have already been like almost halfway through my military career.
Yeah.
Right. And so if I, for all the young listeners here, if there's anything that I could say is like, you don't have to know all the answers, right? I don't know all the answers.
No one knows all the
answers. My parents don't know the answers. They're in their 50s. Like, no one knows all the answers. But if you can get into some kind of path, right, whether it be trade, education, government work, whatever it is, as soon as possible, like literally as soon as you can, right after high school, right after college, whatever it is, it's going to help you, right? You're not going to make the big bucks. You'll probably start out at 40,000 a year. You'll probably start out at 36, whatever it is, right? But you will have a base foundation to be able to invest in other things, right? And do that for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is, and you'll have so much more freedom.
Yeah.
And it's something that I regret, but I also learned along the way. And I wouldn't have met my wife if I hadn't like gone the path that I've gone.
Yeah.
So everything works out for a reason, but I definitely chose the harder path. The path with the most resistance. Yeah. Literally went the opposite of what like the average person would do.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, take it for what it is. This is coming from a man that's delivering pizzas. So dude, this is, I just have to like, you have to appreciate the little stuff.
Yeah.
Since I started this podcast, this is going to be episode 42. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm still learning, but you know, there's a certain flow to the show and this Zencaster really helps with that.
Yeah.
I if there's any way I can Are you segueing into an ad right now, bro? Dude,
You're segueing into an ad, bro, an unpaid ad.
An unpaid ad, because this, I don't know how the quality is going to sound after we're done, but it just sounds fantastic. And I usually like when I'm recording on GarageBand, I haven't figured out how to change it from like bars to like seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe because I haven't played around with it either.
Pretty easy to do.
Haven't played around with it. Didn't even touch it. I know what I need to do on GarageBand.
I'll tell you how to do it right now.
Okay. So
go to the thing at the top where that is, where the bars are. Then click it and you change it from like, you can do seconds and time, large, beats, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not going to turn on now because I don't want it to interrupt with Zencaster.
Dude, Zencaster, bro.
Zencaster. This is sick though. I don't know.
Yeah.
Life's good though. Life's good. What else is new with you? I mean, you're doing DoorDash.
So we got the first mix back for Joe Bryson's new song.
Hells yeah.
And he just sent me a demo of another song that he just got pitched that he wants to put out, apparently. I'm hopping on a call with him sometime tonight. We'll probably talk for damn 4 hours about a release plan. It's way different with him than it is with Vinewood. One, because it's one person, but two, it's country. Like, it's a completely different genre. So, I mean, country's just way easier to get playlisted in because there's less country than there is like rock or pop or whatever. Cause anybody can make a beat in their bedroom and put it out and try and get playlisted. But with a country song, generally there's just not as many, there's not as much tension, I guess, from that type of, it's just not as popular. That's a simple way to put it. And that's how he got playlisted the first time. I think because it's country. So I don't know. I mean, we're working on it with Vinewood too. I'm still trying to get Silence into playlists. It's hard to do though, but the good thing,
what's the process with that? Just trying to get as many plays as possible.
So when you get playlisted, it shows up in whatever playlist it is. Some of these playlists have 750, 1 million, 3 million, 5 million followers. And so it shows up in their playlist. They play the song and it streams like crazy because there's a million people listening to it. And then those people download it and put it in their own personal playlists. That's ideally what will happen.
Okay.
So playlists now are like radio was in the 90s. Like, it's kind of the backbone of the industry. But when you're an independent artist that doesn't have a label or a big management firm, then it's pushing hard. Pushing it and getting it into the playlists, it's hard to be able to do. Because if you have a label, then the label has connections at Spotify. They basically, like, it's basically a guarantee that you'll show up in a playlist for a few weeks at least.
And get have you ever thought up. About, you ever thought about, like, finding a distribution deal?
Yeah, I know people who have signed distribution deals. I haven't looked too far into distribution deal for anybody.
Okay.
But my personal goal with Vinewood is to never sign away any of our masters. And I don't think I don't think we'll have to. I mean, we talked about this a little bit. I think the last
time. Yeah, we did. Because we talked about
Taylor Swift and Scooter.
Yeah. And that but, and that's still like
there's still a blows time my mind I mean, that I she did that but I said it then and I'll say it again, like, there is a time where selling a portion of your masters would be beneficial, and it could, like, that could be what you need to do, but we're definitely not at a point where we need to be selling our masters away. So
no,
I want to hold on to them as long as possible, let them build value. I mean, it's like a stock, basically.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, so I just finished the Steve Jobs biography. I was listening to it, and it's so good. And I needed to hear that biography.
Yeah.
When I listened to it. But he was talking about, like, Walter Isaacson, the biographer, hinted on, like, Steve's obsession with Bob Dylan and the Beatles.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this. I also didn't know that Steve Jobs was removed from Apple for 10 years.
Really?
I thought it was, yeah, dude, I thought it was like a couple years. He was gone for a decade. Yeah. And that's during that decade is when he started the next computer company and then sold some of that to Apple. But then he also not started Pixar, but he was the CEO of Pixar.
Was he during
During the Bug's Life and the Toy Story days. Yeah, he was there when Pixar was first making animation for Disney.
That's
as a as a separate entity. It was like a contractual deal where they were just working together.
Yeah.
And then he negotiated for the buyout of Pixar.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And when he came back to Apple, he was CEO of Pixar and Apple. At the exact same time.
Dope. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. But you know, the crazy thing is that he had like an obsession, not a crazy thing, but a cool thing. He had an obsession with Bob Dylan and the Beatles. And he didn't meet Bob Dylan until late into his career. He was like in his 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
Like Steve Jobs. So like he died like shortly after meeting Bob Dylan, which is crazy. But the Beatles, there was a lawsuit against Apple Computers and Apple Corp, which was the original managing firm for the Beatles, for namesake. Like, why are you calling yourself Apple Computers, right? We're Apple Corp.
Yeah.
And so there was a huge battle for 30 years.
Dang.
They could not come to, like, an agreement. And, like a solid agreement. One of the first agreements was like, cool, you be Apple Corp, I'm going to be Apple Computers. You don't make computers and we'll stay out of the music industry. Yeah. Right.
Well, which now they're balls deep in the music industry.
Well, and iTunes was one of the first legal.
Yeah.
I think it was the first legal pay to play platform.
Yeah.
Where you could pay for an individual song. And that was very controversial because there was no more bundling anymore. They were unbundling albums for just the hit songs that people wanted to hear. Yeah. But yeah, they couldn't come up to an agreement. And then there was lawsuits all the way up until like 2012. And finally, it took 30 years for Steve Jobs to get one of his favorite bands onto iTunes. They had finally come to an agreement.
That's wild.
It's dude. That is crazy how long it took. Like most of the Beatles are dead by then.
Yeah. Two of them.
You know, like that's crazy. So I Yeah, it's nuts
kids,
hearing
all
about.
All the kids listening at home, don't sell your masters.
For all those that are in the music industry, or really like, you know, the same can go for artists when they like any kind of medium, right?
At all.
Let's say you're an oil painter, right? Hang on to those original pieces and sell prints.
Yeah.
Like, trust me, I have a lot of artist friends that do pretty well for themselves a lot. And like, most of them are starving artists, but they're very, very talented. And the unfortunate thing is that they don't have the investment to make prints, because it can be costly if you want some high quality ones, or they don't have the forethought to do so.
Yeah.
And so they
see the money and they're like, oh shit, yeah, give it.
Yeah. They see $250 for their original painting. They go, oh, cha-ching, like now I can eat for 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you sit on that, right, just like a stock, right? I don't believe in day trading. So I'm definitely like that guy that looks long term, right? Is if you sat on that original painting, like I own an original painting of an artist in DC, shout out to Torian Washington. He is very politically motivated and his paintings are very interesting. But the one that stood out to me the most was part of a series called the Bullshit Series. And it was a series of paintings where there's literally bulls taking a shit on a toilet. And this one he had painted with a painted toilet roll. Like, it was just paper, but it was meant to be a toilet paper roll of a list of things he thought was bullshit in society. And I saw that when I was 15 years old, and I told him to hang on to it. Do not sell this original. When I get a job, I was probably 14, actually. When I get a job, I'm going to save up money and I'm going to buy that from you, the original piece. And he held on to it. And I held on to my word, too. I got my job, my first job at Joann Fabrics, probably 2 or 3 months. Joann Fabrics, bro.
The craft store.
Bro, I loved it. Those ladies loved me. I worked there for almost 3 years, dude.
Dang.
But I saved up my paychecks, and the first two purchases I made were a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses that my mom swore up and down was the dumbest purchase because I'm going to lose them in a couple weeks. I still have them to this day. And
my mom hates the sunglasses thing too, because I used to always lose the cheap ones that we would get. But knock on wood, I've had the same Ray-Bans now for 2 years. The pair that I had before that, I actually left in Dublin, Ireland, but rip.
So I've had these sunglasses, this pair, for 10 years.
Yeah. Dude, I'm a huge sunglasses guy. I'm a big Ray-Bans Clubmaster guy. I've always got them. That's like my signature.
Yeah, mine are, I like the Clubmasters. I think the next pair of sunglasses I buy, because that's the only nice pair I have.
Yeah.
It's just those Ray-Bans. So like the hippie round circled ones.
Yeah.
I was a huge hippie back then, but.
You thought you were. Weren't a hippie. You weren't tripping balls at Woodstock, dude.
No. But the next ones I'm getting are they're an Oakley's sunglass. And I'm trying to remember what they're called. Oh, no. I can't remember. Anyways, they're like $150, just the same as these Ray-Bans were. Yeah. But anyways, I made that purchase, and then I saved up and I bought the painting from him. I also had to pay for shipping. So I had already moved to Alaska. Torian lives in the DC metropolitan area. So somewhere in like Silver Springs, Maryland or something like that.
That's where our drummer lives.
Where?
He lives close to Silver Springs, I think.
Who does?
Gary, our drummer.
Oh, okay. I bought it. I think I bought it for a total of $450. And I still have it to this day. I love the painting. My wife hates it. She's like, I don't want you to hang that up. It's being hung up in my studio whenever I build it. But it's gone with me wherever I've moved.
Yeah.
Like literally wherever I've moved, I've taken this painting with me. And I know one day, because Torian's a very talented artist, I know one day that painting's going to be worth a hell of a lot more. And I probably still won't ever sell it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I know that I bought it at entry level.
Yeah.
Where it was like he was developing his skills. And, you know, it always, for any artist, it takes you know, at least 5 to 10 years of steady work, steady grind. And for, and that's just like in the music industry. For like medium artists that are physically creating art, it could take 30 years before your artwork blows up. It could be posthumously. You're dead and your art has just now taken off.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, it's something that I'm glad I bought when I did, because now I'm sure his paintings are going for double that, if not more.
Yeah.
Already. But at the same time, if you're a new artist, just think about what I just said. Like, I bought
a painting. Save your masters, save your originals.
And just sell prints. Sell prints, sell distribution, but don't sell your masters.
Yeah.
And your originals. So I mean, we're, again, like Cabe works at DoorDash and Puronix.
Dude, I'm about to be done with DoorDash. I hate telling people that I'm delivering food, but there's like nothing else to do.
Bro,
I'm just sitting at home bored as hell all the time.
At the end of the day, like, and I think I had a podcast episode on this recently. I had to swallow my pride because I went from a really nice paying job that I had a lot of freedoms to do whatever I wanted, to making, you know, not much money at all.
Yeah.
Right. Like maybe $30,000 a year, maybe. And that's not just one job. That's everything combined that I do, maybe $30,000 a year. And I'm not ashamed to say that and like voice that out, but I'm also not proud of it.
Yeah.
At all. And, right now I'm listening to Daring Greatly. Have you heard that book or read it?
No.
Okay. Another book that I'll suggest to you. It, Brené Brown she's called a shame psychologist or a shame expert. And another book that I needed to hear at this pivotal point in my life where I'm making very tough decisions.
Yeah.
For the sanctity of my like mental stability and financial stability. But she talks about like men and women being so hard on themselves for decisions that, you know, are yes, they're important, they're critical, but they don't have to be emotionally tied.
Yeah, dude, that's how I am with like decisions for the most part. Like I'm a pretty decisive person just by nature, which I think is good, but I'm also impulsive. So I'll make a decision on impulse and then stick with it because I don't want to swallow my pride on like being wrong or something. But I'm a very, very decisive person. I think that's good. I never really worry about what would have happened if, you know, like what would have happened if I didn't do this or if I did that instead. So
I don't know. I mean, kudos, because I'm a very reflective person. And so when I like, even when I was working at Joann Fabrics or I worked at Sullivan Arena or I worked at the Alaska Airlines Center in Alaska, like these weren't like high paying jobs at all, but I had built a bond with everyone, you know? And so leaving was actually emotionally draining for me, like quitting those jobs. Cause it was like, this is what I've known for the past 3 years, or this is what I've known. I think at Sullivan Arena, I was technically employed there for like 8 years.
Dang.
Something crazy like that. Like I started at 18, maybe 6 years or so. I left when I was like 24, 25. So yeah, dude, like, and that was just a weekend gig when like we had events or there was a hockey game or something like that. But, and this Vivint thing is emotionally draining for me because it was a job that paid me a lot of money, but it also was a job that came in waves of income.
Yeah.
Right. And that is, you know, that's what I'm trading. I'm trading a lot of money, right? We're talking 70 plus thousand a year in such a short amount of time, right? I'm usually making that in like 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
And I'm trading that for 30,000 a year, but stable, right?
Yeah.
So it's spread out throughout the year. And it's, you know, when I talk to people that have never worked in the door-to-door industry or never made good money on it, it's hard for them to understand, but it's also like hard for people to understand the opposite way too, where, you know, They've worked in door to door. They've been very successful. And I'm leaving that for something stable.
Yeah.
Right. Like, obviously I don't plan on delivering pizzas for more than like the next 3 months or so.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, shit, dude, if I'm delivering pizzas after the summer, fuck. Like,
yeah,
damn it. Like, that means something went very, very wrong with the Border Patrol job.
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. Hey, I I'm working on not shaming myself for taking a lower paying opportunity, and that's been very difficult for me.
Yeah,
taking away my freedoms, working 40 or 50 hours a week, where I have to actually clock in and out for the man.
Yeah,
pay the man, stuff like that. But this book is gives me a lot of like pinpoints. The Darren Greatley book gives me a lot of like tips and pinpoints to not shame myself for making what I think is a smart decision.
Yeah.
So it's crazy, dude. So when's your next single coming out? We got to wrap this podcast up.
So Vinewood, hopefully. It would be really funny if Vinewood and Joe's release fell on the same day. Actually, I just noticed that. But hopefully Vinewood's next single will be out May, either 22nd or 23rd or the 29th or the 30th. So by the end of the month. And then Joe's also will be around that time. His might come out at the very beginning of June. But both releases are coming out very soon.
And are you guys doing an LP or an EP or anything like
that? No, I think if you put it on an EP, at least to labels, someone told me this isn't strictly my opinion, but I definitely agree with it now. I think an EP looks weak, in my opinion.
Okay. I think so too, because it's usually like 4 or 6 tracks.
Yeah.
And it's not,
I think if you're going to put out
anything heavy handed.
Yeah. I think if you're going to put out anything big, you need to just put out a record. And I'm completely against putting out a record right now because of streaming. I mean, no one listens to records. The only one that I've listened to in the past month is the Sam Hunt one that I was talking about, and I've listened to it like 5 times. But
see,
you need to put out singles and let people digest it, and then put everything out as a compilation, basically. So
that's actually 2 points I want to make. I'm that oddball. I'm that anomaly that re-listens to whole albums,
yeah,
right? Whether it be like Coheed and Cambria or Yo-Yo Ma,
yeah,
or
Yo-Yo Ma,
yeah, bro. or Eminem or anything like that, dude. I have an eclectic taste for music.
Dang.
I'm all over the place. On another note, have you ever heard of the rap artist named Russ?
Yeah.
Okay, so Russ,
that dude's
is like,
fucking crazy. That dude is insane. Like, actually. Like,
yeah, I imagine he is. April and I, it was my like actual first concert that I ever went to, was with my wife.
Yeah.
She bought, Russ is her favorite rap artist. She bought tickets. This is when we were dating the first summer I was in Laredo. And we drove. I asked my boss, I was like, hey, I know this is like really weird. I'll never ask this again. But can I leave early on Saturday? And, you know, like Vivint or any door to door.
Oh, late on a Saturday. That means you need to have your third deal by then. Shut up.
Yeah, exactly, man. Shut up. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
and so he was actually like really cool. It was like kind of not for her birthday or my birthday. I think it was just like we were going. I'm not even actually quite sure. Maybe it was for her birthday. But I asked him and he granted it to me. I was like, fuck, okay, cool. And I actually closed a deal. I closed the deal early in the morning. And then I had Thanksgiving in the summer with a family. They were so nice. They're actually family friends with my in-laws. I didn't know that at the time.
That's
but
funny.
I had Thanksgiving dinner, dude, like straight up in the middle of summer with this awesome family. And
those were the best customers, bro.
Bro. They weren't even a customer, dude. They were just an awesome family.
Yeah.
And they invited me. I knocked on the door, pitched her. She's like, look, like on a, it was a situation that like, she really just couldn't pay for it. Yeah. And I was like, all right. Like I got like my 10th no. And I was like, all right, no worries. And she goes, but you know what? I really like you. Right. I was like, oh, that's awesome. She goes, I know this is weird, but would you like to have Thanksgiving dinner with our family? I've seen you walk back and forth for like 2 weeks now. And I just say, I know you get hungry. Is it okay if you stop in and just have dinner with us? I'm like,
hell yeah.
I'll never pass by free food.
Yeah, for sure.
Come on now. I didn't get big by starving myself. So April actually scooped me up from that house, and then we drove to San Antonio, 2.5 hours, stayed the night in San Antonio, and saw the Russ concert. So Russ is one of those guys that I think he's still independent, but I know he writes his own songs. He produces his own songs. He distributes his own songs. And he started out just making singles. And then once he's compiled a list of like 12 or more singles, then he puts out an album with those singles. And it's such a brilliant way to amass an audience very, very quickly. Well,
lets people decompress. Like, you don't have to comprehend an entire record at one time.
Well, and it's also the opposite of what the industry started out with when iTunes and stuff became big, when they were debundling.
Yeah.
Right. So now what he's doing is he's putting out the singles first and then bundling it as an album. And the reason why that works is because then you're playlisted very quickly, I imagine. And people look at that and they see an album with maybe a couple of new songs that weren't singles before. Right. And they're going to download the album so they can listen to it all in order.
Yeah.
It's such a brilliant business model.
Yeah.
Anyways, dude, we're at about 51 minutes. So we're at 52. I'm going to cut this off because I got a shower and get ready.
All right. Let me plug my stuff really quick. All right.
Plug it.
Go. If you get on Spotify, look up MTSU by Cabe Wyatt. It's a playlist. We've compiled a list of like 35 songs of local MTSU artists. That's where we go to school. Some really dope music on there. It's on Apple Music as well. Just look up MTSU by Cabe Wyatt. Go check out Vinewood's new single. Go stream Joe's shit. And look for new music very soon. Lakota, I sent you the song. Don't distribute it to anyone, but listen in the car on headphones. It's so sick.
I will for sure listen to it. I saw it here on my phone. I appreciate you, man. Much love. And we're going to do this again very, very soon.
All right. Love you, dude.
Love you.
Go Tigers. Peace. Peace out.
All right, Contians, that's the end of the episode. Be sure to like and subscribe and comment down below one of your favorite aspects of the episode. You can find me at Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, all IconTeven to some extent. I did change the Facebook link to IconTeven Podcast because I'm spending more time on the podcast than I am on the blog. And be sure to look out for a new episode on Wednesday. Also, if you haven't already checked out Philosopher's Apothecary CBD, you really should. It's going to be the highest quality CBD oil sourced straight out of California for the lowest price possible. You can check us out at philosapothecary.com. That's philosapothecary.com for the most affordable CBD online. I will check you guys on Wednesday. Peace.